Min għajnejn barranin fuq campus 103.7 ħana għaleb l-Inglis passoltu f'din essenzila. This is Malta through international eyes on campus 103.7. I'm Colin Fitz. Hello. Today I have a half Maltese, half British top model, international personality, DJ. Her name is Tiffany Pisani. I've been wanting to interview her in this series for a while. Welcome, Tiffany.
Thank you very much, Colin.
It's good to have you. In the first series of this program, we're now in the fourth series, I had interviewed your mother.
Okay.
And she was a great guest. Just say hello to her and hello.
I will do.
to her. She had told us about meeting your father and coming to live in Malta way back in the 80s.
Yes.
And she had a very interesting story to tell.
Yeah, she met him on a holiday romance, actually. So
indeed.
And they're still together. So, yes, quite a unique story over there.
Indeed. So hello to Jill Pisani. And I invite listeners to find the program in our archives on the Campus 103.7 website, because it's a very entertaining edition of this series, which in Maltese is called Minainain Baranin, which means Malta through foreign eyes, Malta through international eyes. Now, Tiffany, you've spent most of your life in Malta, haven't you?
Well, yes. I lived here until I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spent over 10 years abroad, and I was based in London,
yes.
But I was modeling there, so I'd be based there, and then I'd take a contract in either Paris, Milan, China, Australia, America, so I got to move around quite a bit.
So in this program, we're going to be focusing a lot on those 10 years that you lived abroad,
okay.
And the traveling, and the living in different places, and the many places you've visited, and the exciting things you've done, and the exotic foods you've eaten, from the perspective of Tiffany Pisani, who's half Maltese, half British, but from this tiny little island, you became a television star in the UK and did all these wonderful things. Was on the cover of an international magazine called Company.
Yes.
So that's fantastic. And also in your DJ career, I mean, it's like you have a parallel career. Mm-hmm. You've done some awesome things there as well. For example, you've been invited to DJ at festivals such as Glastonbury.
Yes, that's right. Right.
And in the United States as well?
Yes, I played in America, I played in Morocco, Dubai. I used to be resident DJ as well at a place called Sketch in London, which is like a very arty club,
yeah.
Sort of place. And yes, it's with DJing, I've got to go to lots of cool places.
As well. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of travel, but also it's a great achievement.
Thank you.
And I'm very happy for you. To be honest, I have to say the story, Tiffany. The first day I met you, you were 18, 19. I met you in a club,
mm-hmm.
And you were still, you still hadn't made it as a model. You were just starting off.
Mm-hmm. I probably was younger then, so I was probably about 16.
You were there dancing with your friends. And I was the DJ in a nightclub. And obviously, as a top model, you are a very attractive person. So as the DJ, the DJ is always going to notice the attractive people on the dance floor, or in your case, on the box, because
mm-hmm.
you were always quite outgoing. And no wonder you became a model and then also a DJ. But the first time I met you was at a club when I was the DJ and you were the civilians sort
yes.
of thing. And then you went on to do so many wonderful things. Do you mind if I ask, you're in your early 30s now, right?
I'm Jesus' age. I'm 33.
33?
Yes.
Tiffany Biasani, where's the time gone? Actually, let me ask you this question. Heidi Klum is in her 50s, right? And she's still modeling and still doing very well.
I actually did a shoot with Heidi. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite shoots.
Oh, wow.
Well.
Yes. You've met Heidi Klum and yes, worked with her?
Yes, I did. And it was for her makeup brand in England and London.
Oh, wow. What's she like?
She's lovely. She's really beautiful and lovely. And yes, as you were just about to say about an age on a model, I suppose the older you get, it just changes the brands that you work with. Like you work with the brands that are associated with your target audience, let's say.
I see. And at the moment in your modeling career, are you still exploiting that? Are you still living
still
that? Or are
modeling,
you focusing on the DJ?
I will always be a model, like always. I started so young. I actually started when I was 12 years old. So I was extremely young. And I hold it very dear to my heart. And I like to continue to model. I just do it with different brands now. And I, let's say, choose the brands a bit more suited to me. When I was modeling full time, it was full time. So it was something else. But now I feel like I've grown up with some of the brands that I work with. So I have a better relationship with them as well. And I would like to continue doing it. Yes.
Indeed. At one point, you even had your own brand of swimwear.
Yes, I did.
Which I remember hosting the evening, one of the fashion shows that you did at Malta Fashion Week. Is that still ongoing or?
No, I closed my swimwear line, but I did have it for a long time. I was very happy with it. I sold it in Malta, in Hong Kong and in London as well.
Oh gosh, wow.
But yes, I'm done with that for now. Maybe in the future I might have another line, but as it stands right now, no, it's closed.
Okay. So yes, and you explained to us about how it works with models. As you say, you don't stop modeling, you just change. And the offers don't stop coming in, but they are offers maybe from different companies than the ones you had when you were 20 or 21.
Yes, I mean, today it's all about social media really, isn't it? So like, I think it's not just about being a model. In the beginning of when I had started, basically there wasn't Instagram and all of this, there wasn't. So I kind of got
even
the last...
Facebook was in its infancy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got the last bit of, let's say, the old style of modeling,
yes.
The classical style of it.
Yes.
I think today you have to adapt yourself, and that goes for anyone, not just models, even people that are artists or any sort of work. You have to stay up to date with Instagram and social media and promote yourself. With that comes different endorsements. So let's say we can call it influencing instead of modeling.
Yes.
But my the people I work with tend to be more fashion-based because that's my background, really, let's say. Or people that go into my lifestyle and the things that I'm doing.
Yeah. But you still get, for example, asked to be the face of this brand.
Yes, I do.
Especially in Malta, I'd say, and perhaps even abroad.
So recently I did a job in London for Tess Daly, who has a swimwear line called Naya. And it's actually sold in a shop in Malta by Soeli. And I flew to London and I modeled for her swimwear brand. So to answer your question, if I'm still modeling abroad or not.
Indeed,
I
yes.
am.
And I follow British television and British culture. And the name Tess Daly is very familiar. I've seen her on TV, I think. Is she a presenter?
She's the presenter of Strictly Come Dancing.
That's right. Yes, that's very popular even in Malta. So, wow, Tess Daly. This is just really interesting. I find it fascinating. Let's go back to the beginning. So you were 12, you said,
yes.
And you were living here in Malta. You have very pale skin.
Yes.
So you're half Maltese, half British, green eyes. And at 12, what was the first modeling thing you did?
Well, I always used to watch America's Next Top Model as a kid with my sister and my mom. We were obsessed about it. It was quite a big deal back then. There weren't that many reality TV shows on, and especially about modeling.
This was in the early 2000s, I'd say.
And I'd say I would watch it religiously, to be quite frank. So I always liked it from the TV show. And then in Malta, I got discovered by a local agent. And pretty soon after, I was walking on the road as well with my mum and my sister. And then a foreign agent had stopped me who happened to be in Malta and said that they thought I had potential to go to Milan and model.
Gosh.
So I actually went on my summer holidays when I was very young and my mum came with me because obviously I was underage. So she had to be my chaperone. And I saw that I could potentially be, you know, having some work there modeling. And then from that, I had applied by myself. I had applied for Britain's Next Top Model because a lot of people like to claim that one, which they have nothing to do with.
You wrote
I did it all
email.
By myself, so, yes.
Oh, wow.
I applied online and they actually wrote back to me. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Because you had to submit pictures, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was 17 by that point.
17.
But I had been modeling well before. I was like modeling in Germany and Milan in my summer holidays and in Malta locally.
Okay.
But I got on to Britain's Next Top Model when I was 17 and turned 18, like just before the show, basically, because you had to be 18.
Before we talk about the big Britain's Next Top Model program, you have a very thin frame. You're a catwalk model.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there's different types of models,
there
I guess, right? I mean,
models, yeah.
You are the sort of catwalk type. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep yourself, obviously, in this shape.
Yes, you do have to keep yourself in good shape. Yes.
And obviously, there are some controversies about that sort of thing. So let's get that out of the way. And
mm-hmm. Well, I would say what type of model I am. I think initially I was more of a high fashion model. When you say runway, it means high fashion. And that requires a certain frame, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be quite slender.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was younger, I did more of those type of shows. But as I've gotten
older... But you
were
older, naturally like that, weren't you?
Yes, but mm-hmm. I've always been very healthy and gone to the gym and aware of keeping fit. I mean, it's part and parcel of being a model, the same way an athlete needs to train, you know what I mean?
Very good, yes.
And also, I always had an interest myself in just being healthy. I like it and I like to exercise. I was quite sporty at school as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as I grew older, I went more into commercial modeling because my look changed. So you adapt what clients you work with according to how you look, because obviously you don't look the same as when you're 20 and when you're 16, let's say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I started off more in the high fashion and I did quite well in Paris Haute Couture and Milan Fashion Week.
Yeah.
And also London, so... That's where it kind of like all started for me after the show.
When you'd be working in these places at that age, 15, 16, and all the other models were from Germany, England, UK, Italy, whatever, mm-hmm. and they'd ask you, where are you from? Would anybody know where Malta was or know anything about Malta?
Well, the Europeans would, but I lived in Asia for a while and they had no clue where Malta was. They just couldn't understand. And I'd always like get the map out and show them. I was very proud of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I am very proud to be Maltese. I think even though Malta has many things I wouldn't necessarily like, there's much more things that I do like.
We'll talk about those later because that's one of the points of this program, and it's absolutely fine. Everybody has a right to their opinion and has had their experiences, so we'll bring those out a bit later. But to conclude about the health and look and everything, did you ever go through any bad periods where perhaps you felt pressured? And
I mean, being a model, yes, of course you feel pressured. I'd be a complete liar if I said I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain standard you have to look, and it's quite tough, yes. Especially if you're going to castings all day long and you're being booked essentially on what you look like. So you have to have quite a strong, you know, thick skin for it, basically.
How did you get that thick skin?
I mean, I just trained, I was healthy and I was...
No, as in like psychologically, because I'm sure you had people,
agents
being nasty to you saying...
Yes, of course, yes.
It's well known that to make you work harder, they go over the top with their insults.
Yes,
sometimes.
But I just felt lucky to have the opportunities that I did have and I was just very, very driven, to be quite honest, and I tried not to let them get to me.
But your mental health over the years, your physical health...
I think I'm good.
Good. Fair enough. Good. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
And also perhaps we have some aspiring models listening as well. So discipline, perhaps you always had your mom you could perhaps speak to and your sister. You're very close.
Yeah, I did.
So you always have people you can lean on. In the difficult moment.
Yeah, I suppose so, yes.
Okay, so you wrote off to Britain's Next Top Model, the reality show that was happening in the UK, the British version.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh yeah, come and take part. And how many auditions were there until you actually got seen on TV and was one of the final girls?
It took quite a while. As I said, I was 17 when I initially applied. So it was filtered through many emails and meetings online. And then, I don't know, like after 6 months or so, I flew up to London to meet them in person. Took a couple of more months after that to find out I was actually on the show, and it kind of went from there.
Wow. This was 2012, was it?
2010.
Goodness me, where is... Where's
but
the
I
time
had
gone?
Applied in 2009.
2009?
Yes.
No. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And obviously, all right, we all know there's plenty of articles online as well and interviews that you've done over the years. You ended up winning that series. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of pushback from some people saying, oh, but she's Maltese. How can she win Britain's Next Top Model? Well, how did you deal with that?
Well, I have dual nationality. So and one of the requirements was that you have to be a British you have to be British, basically, to take part. So
and you were half British, exactly. So you were... It was totally fine for you to...
Yes. Yeah. I didn't think I'd win, though. I definitely did not think I'd win. And also, they had blocked Malta from voting because they said it wasn't fair because it was basically public vote, the final.
Ah.
We were in the top three and they blocked Malta because they said it wouldn't be fair to the other contestants.
Public vote was all over the world, but except Malta, or just the UK?
I don't know if it was all over the world, but I do know that Malta was blocked from voting.
Because it was on satellite as well, this program. Yeah. You could actually, I remember watching the final on the night, live.
Yes. So yes. I thought there's absolutely no chance I'm going to win now.
Of course, half of Malta would have voted for you, if not all of Malta.
I was really hoping, you know, if I had the chance, it would be Malta that pushed me through. But actually, it was the English.
It was English.
The English as well. The
people who live in the UK. Yeah.
So I'm extremely grateful for that. And believe me, I was in shock for days afterwards. I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it till today, to be quite honest with you, that I won that show. So I'm very lucky.
There was even talk at the time that the Australian top model, who was the figurehead of the show.
Elle McPherson,
that she didn't like you?
Elle was lovely with me.
I know she was. You say yes. So, but at the time, I remember.
I mean,
it came
TV.
Across like she was. She
was a bit.
Was it manufactured?
I think maybe
she was cruel to you. Not cruel, but she was pushy to you.
Well, the modeling industry is just cruel in general, really, isn't it?
It's all true what we see in the movies.
Yes, but McPherson was lovely to me and supported me. I mean, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have been in it.
Absolutely. So. And she made you cut your hair and all that.
Yes. That very famous scene.
Indeed. Isn't it interesting how... when I interviewed you, like in 2012, I think it was, you know, around this time, and one of the questions had to be, because Malta was still old-fashioned at the time, and you had to do topless, artistic, nude type modeling. I wouldn't ask that question today.
No.
Have you seen a difference in even here in Malta? We've come a long way and become very much like any other European country.
I felt almost crucified for doing some stuff like that in Malta. Now
indeed.
It's like, no big deal whatsoever.
Indeed. You know, and we've got, you know, Miranda Conte singing the Eurovision song.
Exactly.
And everything and drag shows and all sorts of things. You know, we've come a long way when it comes to Malta becoming like other European countries. And you've noticed that as well. Even has the talent increased? Is it more professional to model here in Malta nowadays than it used to be?
Oh my gosh, it's so much better in Malta now.
How? Tell
when
us.
I started, there was nothing. Nothing. I don't want to say that because it's not fair on the locals, because there were people with a lot of talent. Also agents that were good, but in general, there wasn't so much of an industry for it, and certainly not where models were getting paid the amounts they should have been getting paid. So definitely I've seen an increase in the whole industry in Malta. We have more fashion designers coming, we have more local talent, and I'm very, very happy that it's grown because it deserves it, Malta.
You had a good relationship with Julian McDonald, the designer, didn't you?
Yes, he came down to Malta Fashion Week. We invited him over, basically, and he came down. So it's obviously a huge honour for such a big English designer to kind of put Malta on the map.
Indeed. And you're saying that nowadays things are, even the payments are better and...
They are. I think there's still a lot of room for improvement, mm-hmm. Let's say it that way. But it's definitely so much better than what it used to be.
And one thing you explained to me when I first interviewed you after the big news and you were doing the first few years of living abroad and coming and going, visiting Malta, but doing your thing abroad, appearing on the cover of Company magazine, was that you won the program, you won one edition, as in the 1 year, of Britain's Next Top Model. But that didn't mean you became a top model automatically. That was the first few steps and opened some doors for you. But then you had a lot of hard work to do and your agent needed to keep submitting pictures of you and you needed to Because you didn't become a top model overnight.
I mean, what I had was recognition from the English public. So that gave me a huge advantage over other models when I went to castings. Because imagine you go to a casting, there's hundreds of models and they only need to pick one.
If
they pick somebody that people know already, it's much better for them in marketing. So it definitely gave me
So you had that advantage, big push, yes.
I did, but
yes.
It didn't mean that everything was handed to me on a silver platter.
No.
I had to work very hard. It was very long days and nights, and it was quite brutal, yes, and lonely too, because you had to travel all the time by yourself, and I was 18 after all as
indeed.
Well.
Indeed.
But I had a very good run at it. As I say, I'm still modeling, is not full time, but still am, and I'm very grateful for what I had. But yes, it was hard work. It was not easy.
Did it pay? Did you make a good living? Could you afford London rentals and
well,
to feed yourself?
For nearly 10 years, so I would say yes, I did okay. Yes.
You did okay. Yes. Yeah. So, and how long did the recognition from that program last? As in,
I still get it till today, actually.
Really?
Yes, I do. Not as much, of course, as when I had initially won, but I still get messages till today, and even still book jobs till today off it.
Gosh.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's like a family, Britain's Next Top Model, you know? Like, once you're in it, it kind of stays with you. And a lot of the winners before and after me are doing very well as well.
Who else have you worked with over the years? We said Heidi Klum, Elle Macpherson. Give us a name drop a few people.
Well, I've worked for magazines such as Vogue, Marie Claire, Cosmopolitan. I've worked for ASOS, Dove, Harvey Nichols, all sorts of different brands, big brands.
You still lead a glamorous life, both modeling and DJing.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the DJing and how it came about. But first, let's actually hear a song, a tune.
All right.
That is one of yours, one of your favorites. Have you ever produced music as well?
I have, actually.
So we'll talk about that later on. But let's hear one of your chosen tunes today to have a break from the chat.
Okay, so here's Bill Withers, Lovely Day.
Bill Withers and Lovely Day. Why did you choose this song?
I just want people to have a lovely day, whoever's listening to it. It makes me feel quite good.
Okay.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes. Something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Yeah.
Okay, so the piece of music chosen, the first piece of music chosen by Tiffany Pisani, who is my guest in today's edition of Malta Through International Eyes. Now, Tiffany, apart from being a model, an international model, and has been for quite a while, at which point did you decide to start dabbling in DJing?
Well, I always had an interest in music, and I think that initiated from my mom. She always loved it, and she'd always play it in the kitchen to me and my sister, and we'd always like have a dance like when she'd be cooking, and that kind of stayed with me. And I just remembered how good we felt like when the music was on and when good tunes would come on. So I always had an interest for it. As you know, in Malta, we have quite the scene as well.
And a big house music scene,
exactly.
Especially.
And as you said, you remember me going out quite young as well and enjoying the nightlife.
Indeed. Pacheville, the clubs. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my friends were just into it. And I would start collecting music, not ever on the plan of playing it one day. But I just noticed I had a really good library of it, let's say.
Was this vinyl at that time
not vinyl,
CD?
No, on CD.
On CD?
Then later on, online, and I just would collect it as a hobby. Like, I never really thought much more of it, to be honest.
So what was your first gig?
My first gig, I just happened to be at a big party in Ibiza.
In Ibiza, okay.
Ibiza. And I was there actually to shoot a magazine cover, and I was at an after party, and one of the DJs was unable to play.
Oh.
And I happened to have two USBs with me. And these two USBs, I just had music on, just like, because I just collect music.
Yeah.
And they're like, my friend knew that I had these USBs, and they're like, can you go play? Because the DJ can't play. And I'm like, no, I'm not a DJ. Like, what the hell? Like, and basically, they're like, please, otherwise there's not going to be any music. And I put the USBs in. Like,
into the two CD.
Yeah, I had no clue what I was doing.
Right?
Like, absolutely no clue what I was doing. All I knew
the
was how to press play. Like,
that you could mix with. Okay.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And I just put them in, and everyone was really liking my choice. I was like, oh, you know. I never in a million years thought that. And from there, like, I had some friends tell me, you know, you could actually start DJing if you wanted to. And I thought, why not? Let me try. And I started practicing at home and, like, watching YouTube and asking other DJ friends of mine if they'd give me some tips. And pretty much from there, pretty quickly, I booked quite a few things.
Okay.
And then I realized I had quite a lot of potential in it. So I practiced more and I've now been doing it for like over 10 years.
I'm sure when you were first trying to break into the scene, you would get this occasional snide comment saying, oh, you're only playing because you're a model. And
oh, God, I get that all the time.
You still get that today?
I get that all the time. Like, people love to be like that with me. Yes.
But you must have been doing something right. You must be a decent DJ if you get asked to play.
Well,
big
I don't
international
think I'd managed
parties
to do it for over 10 years if I
exactly
wasn't such a good DJ.
Exactly.
So, and it's taken me quite a lot of courage to say that, I have to be fair, because it did used to play on my mind quite a lot, because I wasn't sure because of their comments if I am a good DJ or not, especially because I was predominantly a model. But I just think people just like to chat about other people, whether it's nice or not. And to be quite frank, I couldn't really care.
Which is bitchier, the modeling world or the DJ world?
Well, they're both bitchy in their own ways, let's say.
Fantastic. So, yeah, tell us about your best experiences as a DJ.
Well, as a DJ, I've had a lot. I was actually in a band once before, in a band called Girls International. And the reason why I mention that is because they're all the backing singers of like Rod Stewart, Dua Lipa, and all of these like very huge famous artists. And they basically go abroad and they sing and perform at private events. And one time they asked me to fill in as their DJ, and it's an all-female band.
Gosh.
And I ended up touring with them on a few different countries and events. And again, I never thought I'd be in a girl band.
Indeed.
So that's a highlight for me, because I can't sing and I never thought that a DJ could be in a band. So that's a highlight. Another highlight is all the people I've got to meet in all the countries I've been to. And obviously Glastonbury is, like, for me, the best one that I've played at. But also what I do like is that now I do my own events. I started doing my own events about 6 years ago. And I'm very happy with them because I've got, like, how do you say, I come up with the concepts, everything. Mm-hmm. I invite other guest DJs.
And the average amount of people who turn up at your events, as in like your followers?
On Halloween, I had about 300 people. Mm-hmm. Now I'm doing pop-ups, which is like around 100 people.
Okay.
But I have other events coming up, maybe for bigger numbers as well. So they're all different mm-hmm. concepts.
Yeah. Tell me, how did Glastonbury come about? How did they ask you to DJ at Glastonbury?
A friend of mine works at Glastonbury and had been following me for a while DJing.
Yeah.
And one year asked me, would you like to come and play? And I was like, yes, I would, definitely. So I sent off some of my music and I went up and played. And then I played again a couple of years later.
When you're at Glastonbury, do you also get to mingle with other people backstage? I mean, how
does
it work?
There was Idris Elba.
As in, famous people.
There's lots of famous people, yes.
And you're one of the performers, so.
Yes.
Wow.
I think it's a bit surreal, and it's also quite like, you don't really look at it in that way when you're there. I was just like so happy to be there, you know? Especially I felt like I was representing Malta, and not only Malta, but also the first female Maltese there.
Yeah.
And I was very nervous as well because I wanted to do my best.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really focused on what celebrities were walking around. I was just dead set on my set and making sure I gave a really good performance.
Which you did.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's the difference when you DJ abroad and when you DJ here?
Okay.
Well,
in Malta, as you know, we're a small island, so obviously you see familiar faces.
Okay.
Abroad, it's always a different crowd. Mm-hmm. So I would say that is the main thing. You kind of tend to see the same people. And in the weekends on Malta, whereas abroad it's always completely different and bigger numbers.
Do you have to adapt your set for an international audience, or do the general public here in Malta, as in the Maltese, and foreign people who live here, who come to your parties here, do they experience the same music that you would play, for example, for a British crowd?
Yes, I change my set for every single party that I do. So depending on what the theme is, where it is, what time of day it is, I change it every single time, but it's the same. And yes.
Okay. And when it comes to party organization, again, you've been doing it for 10 years.
Organizing around six, DJing for 10 years.
Yes. Yeah. Have you seen any changes in the last 10 years in DJing here in Malta, in the scene?
Well, there's definitely a lot more events, that's for sure. I think Malta's doing amazing on that front. We're getting huge artists every single weekend, and even in the week in summer. So it's really nice to see that Malta's doing so well. And again, you know, we're getting all of this huge talent come over.
And are the local DJs treated better nowadays than they used to? Are they paid enough?
No.
Still not enough. I ask that question because it's quite well known. There's still a lot of people who think that exposure is enough.
I think after DJing, you go naturally. For me, it was to go on doing my own events. I still play at other places too. I still get booked as just a DJ. But the fee for DJs in Malta is still low, yes.
Okay. So, Tiffany Pisani, DJ Tiffany Pisani, international model. You lived in London for 10 years. What did you miss most about Malta when you went off to live in London for those 10 years?
Well, obviously my family and my friends, the weather.
Okay.
And just the comfort of it. Malta's comfortable. It is.
You had to do your own thing. You had to cook. You had to...
Well, that even in Malta I did before. When I mean comfortable, like as in Malta, if you want to go out and see your friends or just go out, it's simple. In London, it's not. Like you have to plan it. It's
complicated.
It is. It requires more planning, I would say, yeah.
Okay. Now, how many countries have you visited, whether it's working or...
I actually don't know, and I was thinking that the other day, and I think it's over 40, for sure.
Wow.
But I actually need to sit down and write these.
You should, yes. And which were the countries that made the most impact on you?
I went to Africa, a few times to Africa, but I went to Nigeria for Lagos Fashion Week. When I was 21, and that really shook me, not necessarily in a, I don't know what way to say, but it just shook me. It made me realize how privileged we are.
Okay.
So I just felt really proud and lucky to be from Malta, from such a safe country.
Okay.
I also lived in Australia for a while.
As well?
Yes.
What was that like?
I loved it.
Which part of Australia?
I lived in Melbourne and I went to visit Sydney, but I lived in Melbourne for a year. I have family there, like a lot of Maltese people do. And it was lovely. I really enjoyed going there. I also like the States. It's just so cool. Like, it's so different over there. And every state is completely different. You know, it's got everything on it, the continent.
Yeah.
I also lived in Asia. Mm-hmm. So that was a culture shock as well to me, but very interesting.
Asia, yeah. You've been to places, for example, recently, we're recording this program in March 2025. Your followers will know from your social media that you've been to Bali recently, for example. Yes. That looked awesome.
It really, really was beautiful. It really was. It's quite popular at the moment, Bali, I feel like. A lot of people are going there. It's definitely one of the top places to visit at the moment. Absolutely gorgeous. And anybody that's going, I would recommend venturing out, not only just staying in Bali, but going to the other islands because it's a bit more less commercialized, which I prefer.
Okay.
But absolutely stunning place.
As a beautiful woman, a model, you obviously get a lot of male attention.
Not sure if it's the right attention.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Over the years, what are the worst, I don't know, pickup lines, for example, you've encountered?
I think they're too bad to say on the radio, probably.
Okay, let me rephrase. Well, this is a program called Malta Through International Eyes. Okay. Let's start with the average Maltese man.
Okay.
Have you been impressed? Have you dated many Maltese men and compared to foreign men? And then we'll go into detail about the foreign men later.
Okay.
But listen, Maltese men in general, have you had good experiences when you've dated Maltese men?
Well, my boyfriend is Maltese.
Very good.
Obviously, I love him. I'm very happy with him. But the previous Maltese men that I've dated is a whole other story in itself.
Okay.
Definitely would not recommend.
Okay. And what's wrong with like the Maltese men who have disappointed you or been a problem in your life? As in, do
I
they
think that
jealousy?
Just comes down to my poor decisions of choosing men, probably. It's not fair
character.
It's not fair for me to put it down to a nationality. It's not fair.
Okay.
But probably my choice in the past was not the best.
Fair enough. Okay. What's your favorite nationality? I mean, with all respect to your boyfriend, what's his name? Let's give him a mention.
Mike.
Hello, Mike. But this is just a bit of fun. But I don't often get to interview a top international model, and you must have had the occasional dalliance. Let's put it this way. You know, held hands with international men. Have you ever been romanced by some billionaire in Saint-Tropez who sent you roses and set this private jet for you, and any of those experiences?
Maybe I'll leave it at that. Maybe.
Maybe. Okay, but are Italians really, you know, over the top with their compliments? Are Americans brash and are Australians real men?
I don't know. I don't think I've got all the knowledge on men all over the world. Let's put it that way.
So diplomatic. Mm-hmm. I think your third career is going to be ambassador.
Is it?
Model DJ ambassador. Okay. Let's talk about food, for example. Okay, this is a safer subject.
Yes. What's your
favorite Maltese food? And also, is there, when you've been abroad, sort of introducing foreign people to Maltese food, what do you introduce them to?
I love pastizzi personally. Mm. I absolutely love them. I like kini, I like fish, pasta, rabbit as well, even though I feel really guilty after eating it.
Okay, I guess that's the half British part of you.
Exactly, like my mum would not touch it.
Okay.
But yes, I do feel a bit guilty, but it tastes really good. Yes, I like Maltese food a lot, and probably those are the main things that I'd highlight to any foreigner if I was trying to describe Maltese food. But I would not eat horse meat. I think that's where I crossed the line.
Okay. Have you ever been in a situation where you've had an international night with your girly friends, I don't know, maybe in London, and you presented some Maltese stuff? What were the reactions?
Well, I was the face of Kenny for a while, and many years ago, Kenny, I think they still are, they were selling it in London as well, and I did have my friends over and give them some kini and like told them it's made out of bitter oranges and stuff. So yes, that's quite a Maltese thing, and also cheska, like,
of course. And did they like it?
Everybody loves cheska. You know, like, there's gotta be something wrong with you if you don't like it as a beer, because it's like so good. But yeah.
And what your British half? What British food does it like?
I love a roast. I love a roast.
Sunday roast, yeah.
My grandmother was such a good cook. She's from Wolverhampton. She's originally from Manchester, but she met my granddad, who was from Wolverhampton, and they both lived there. And also I have my auntie there and my great auntie as well. And they're all really, really good cooks that I do always hold dear to me every time I go there as well. I look forward to them cooking for me. But yes, I would say typically that would be a roast.
And what's the most exciting, interesting things you have eaten in your travels around the world?
Ooh, okay. I've tried some really peculiar things like crocodile, zebra, lots of unusual meats. But it was only I'll try once type of thing. Not something that I would continue to eat.
Insects in Asia?
No. Insects, absolutely no way. Like, I'm not that brave. Like, and I just don't know why I'd put myself through that. Like, no, thank you. But I do like Asian food a lot. As I said, I lived in Asia for a while, and that was something I came accustomed to. So they put a lot of chili in their food.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's to kill a lot of the bacteria.
Okay.
Especially on the street markets. But I got used to, let's say, spicier food. So I think I've got a higher tolerance to spicy food than, let's say, Mediterraneans do.
Okay. Let's take another break and hear your second track, the second track you've chosen for us.
Okay.
And what song is that?
So it's Eric Bennett and Faith Evans, and it's called Georgie Porgy.
Now, Faith Evans is a singer. I mean, she sang I'll Be Missing You, if I'm not mistaken, way back in the late 90s.
Yes.
And the DJ, is he a DJ or a music producer? Eric Bennett?
I think he's a music producer.
Music producer. And the song, what does it mean to you?
Georgie Porgy. It just reminds me of my mum, to be quite honest. It's one of the first songs that I remember dancing in the kitchen, which I had mentioned earlier.
Okay. Very good. So we're going to hear Tiffany's choice here on Campus 103.7's Minainain Baranin Malta Through International Eyes. I'm interviewing Tiffany Pisani, and I'm Colin Fix.
Just that I'm an addict for your love.
And we're back. Tiffany Pisani, my guest on Malta Through International Eyes. Do you see yourself living here for the rest of your life, Tiffany, or from all these countries you've visited around the world? Do you think perhaps that in the future you would consider settling somewhere else?
I love Malta. I hold it very dearly to me. I never say never, also. Currently, I see myself staying in Malta. In the perfect scenario, I would be based in Malta and travel more, but always based in Malta.
When you lived in the UK, you said you lived in London?
Yes.
But your family, your mum is from Wolverhampton?
Wolverhampton, yes.
What's that like?
Wolverhampton.
Do you enjoy visiting when you go there?
I'll be honest,
very difficult from Malta, obviously.
I love London. Wolverhampton is not for me, though.
Okay.
I love my family there.
Yes.
But it's not for me, no.
Is it very industrial, maybe, or...
It's cold. Very different to Malta, and I did grow up in Malta.
Okay.
I like to be anywhere close to the beach and the sea. I also grew up on the boat, so anywhere where I can see the beach, I'm happy with. There's definitely no beach in Wolverhampton.
Do you get recognised at all when you're travelling? I don't know, modelling, and do people recognise you in other countries from Britain's Next Top Model or from some advertising thing that you've done over the years?
Sometimes I do. Obviously, it was 15 years ago that I did Britain's Next Top Model, so a few years ago, it was more common, let's say. But in England, I still do sometimes. I went to Philippines about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and they recognized me there because I did Miss Universe a few years before, and they are avid fans, so they recognized me from that, which I was very shocked about. Because I didn't win it or anything like that. I was simply representing Malta.
Indeed.
So I was shocked that they remembered me, especially a smaller country like Malta, because usually the bigger countries tend to get
yes.
more.
Isn't
more
it always Venezuela that wins or Costa Rica?
Yes, exactly.
but
it was very nice that
they recognized
me from Malta. So I was happy about that. And also in Australia, when I lived there, I got a bit of recognition because obviously Elle Macpherson was Australian.
Of course.
So yes, that helped.
You did, yes, Miss Universe, in fact, and you got chosen to represent Malta. What was that like, that month? I mean, to be treated almost like royalty for a while. Was it like that?
I wouldn't say treated like royalty, no, but... but again, lots of hard work, but obviously a massive honour mm-hmm. to, like, represent your country. Like, complete dream come true there as well. Like, I was the second one taking part, so that's quite a while ago, and... We were still
what do you mean the second one taking part?
Malta hadn't taken part before. They had taken part... Well, there was one girl before me.
Mm-hmm.
But before her, it was a very long break.
Break before... Okay, then they started taking part again.
Exactly.
Okay, I see.
So
I see.
It was all still not as much, let's say, backing as there is now.
Okay.
Obviously, when you're new participating mm-hmm. in something, the more you participate, the more experience you get on it. It's only natural.
Yes.
So it was still new territory for me, mm-hmm. and there weren't many people to ask, mm-hmm. how was your experience? That's why I'm trying to get at on that.
Did you feel, obviously not, because you took part and you enjoyed it, but you had won Britain's Next Top Model, mm-hmm. and then you went to do Miss Universe.
Yeah.
Was it a step down in a way?
I wouldn't say step down, I'd just say something completely different. Like two different industries. Actually, Elle Macpherson actually hosted Miss Universe.
Okay, so it isn't a step down at all.
No.
Okay, my mistake. But I mean, these sort of beauty pageants sometimes have a bit of
different.
A bad name.
Yes, but I do think that you shouldn't enter a beauty pageant or represent your country until you have a bit more maturity on you, let's say. Because you can be thrown a lot of questions, mm-hmm. which you might not necessarily have life experience to answer. So I think my humble opinion might not be right or wrong,
mm-hmm.
but I think going into it as a bit of an older model would be better.
Okay. Do you see yourself being a mentor to younger models, maybe opening a modeling agency, mm-hmm. teaching?
I get lots of messages on Instagram and social media asking me stuff. I'm always more than happy to answer them. So yes, I'm very much for supporting young women or older women or any age that wish to do it.
But you haven't thought about doing it officially?
I've thought about many things, but I haven't actually started on anything like that. I think the DJing, modeling and running my own events on social media is keeping me quite on my toes as it is.
It is, yes. So what's in the near future for Tiffany Pisani?
I wish I had a glass ball so I could tell you.
You live each day as it comes, day at a time.
I wouldn't say that. Obviously, I have some personal plans that I want to achieve, and obviously I'm working on my events. So yes, there's lots of plans in the future, but you never know. Like, you never know what's going to happen, do you?
So if our listeners want to find out about your next event and what's happening in your life...
I will tell them to follow me on social media, Instagram, which is Tiffany Pisani Official, where I'm very up to date on that, on my stories and my reels. So any events that anybody would want to come and listen to me, you can follow me and see where I'm playing next.
I've noticed, even here in Malta, for example, as you said, there are many more events... music events happening, especially including house music events. Every weekend there's something. International DJs being brought over. Many more female DJs headlining than there used to be.
Yes, there definitely is.
You were one of the first wave, I think, mm-hmm. 10 years ago.
When I had done it 10 years ago, there was only like another two of us. Like.
Even internationally, it was always men being mentioned. But nowadays, plenty of women as well.
Thank
headlining.
God, yes.
Yeah.
It was definitely more male predominant though, yes, mm-hmm. 100%.
So model or DJ or both?
Both. Everything I love.
So if I had to say Tiffany Pisani, I'd have to mention them both in the description. I can't mention just one or the other.
Yeah, maybe. Or just follow me on social media so you can see what I'm doing.
Because, as we said, you might be an ambassador tomorrow.
Exactly.
And you'll be doing something completely different. Tiffany Pisani, it's been an absolute pleasure talking
to you.
So sorry about going over maybe things that you've talked about 100 times over the years in interviews. But you are a star.
Thank you.
And our listeners want to hear all about you. And we wish you the best of luck here at Campus 103.7 for whatever you put your mind to in the future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.